Welcome, everyone, to Good Night and Good Game, your source for geek news for the week that was. I'm your host, James, and with me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Hector.
Hello.
This week on the show, after the news, it's time to deep dive into everything announced at the PlayStation Showcase. Before we start, don't forget that you can head over to goodnight.gg, where as a patron of our show, you can suggest topics for us to talk about. Also, as a patron, you get access to our off-week episodes. We have a lot more movie talk content coming your way for all of you to enjoy. With all that out of the way, it's time for The Prelude.
Prelude.
Hey everyone, welcome to The Prelude. It is time to dive into what we've been up to this week, what we've been playing, what we've been watching, what's been occupying our free time, and what has been making us happy. Hector, what do you got for me?
Oh man, I got a bunch of stuff. Let's see. I've been playing...
Give me some fun stuff.
Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Yes!
Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah, you have to. We had... I am very close to the end. I don't think I'm more than like four at the very most hours from credits. It could be one. Like I'm at the point where like the game's probably right about to end.
It is good shit.
It is very good shit. I am having an awesome time with this game. It is... not perfect. It might be a little far from perfect, but it's a very, very, very good fucking Star Wars game. Mm-hmm. And we don't get those that often. I will say that it's better than its predecessor, which I liked a lot. So you can tell how much I like this game. And even though I do want to call it out for its flaws, because it had fucking game of the year potential for me. It sure really did. And it fell just short because we're getting some fucking bangers this year.
But, absolutely.
But you know what? It would definitely be contender for like my, like I don't know, like my sixth spot in a top five, something like that. You know, it's right on the cusp. Great. I'm having an awesome time with it. Other games I've played very quickly, a game called Humanity, which is available if you have PlayStation Plus for free to download on your PlayStation 4 or 5. It is Lemmings, but a lot more endearing because you herd people through obstacles and you tell them when to jump and where to move and you get them all to like enter the good void instead of the bad void.
I prefer the good void.
Yeah, yeah. You're trying to get them to a good void and you play as a dog. You're a little spirit dog and it's adorable. Can't recommend it enough, especially if you can get it for free. If you have PlayStation Plus, grab it 100%. You'd like and just play the first like five levels. It won't take you an hour and you'll probably keep playing. Last but certainly not least, a game that dropped 2 days ago, Bolt Gun. I've been playing that
Warhammer 40K Bolt Gun.
Warhammer 40K Bolt Gun is a boomer shooter game where you play as a space marine, with, you know, like Doom 1 level pixelated graphics, but space marine level power fantasy as you mow through your enemies with your chainsaw sword and your bolt gun and enemies just explode anytime you hit them with a bullet because you're twice their size and your bullets are basically cars that you're throwing at them. It's awesome. The power fantasy is great. It is a direct sequel to Warhammer 40K Space Marine, the game that came out in like the PlayStation 3 era.
Actually, if you go back and listen to our past episodes, never do that.
Don't do that.
Have an interview from GDC. God, it was in the first year or two.
Oh, wow.
That we did the show.
So like first 100 episodes for sure.
Yeah, definitely first 100 episodes. We went and went to the Games Developer Conference in 2013 here in Austin and spoke to the creator of 40K Space Marine. And of all the interviews that I've done of the course of doing the show, all of them are great. Everybody's been a great interview. But when it came to game developers, the creator of Space Marine, listening to him talk was so wonderful because it reminded you that game developers love what they do, and especially when they get their hands on a property that they love. He wasn't feeding us PR bullshit. He was feeding us, so yeah, I've been a Warhammer fan since I was a kid. This is kind of a dream of mine. Let me tell you why I loved making this game.
Yeah. Love that energy. Love it very much. It's a great game. You can get it on Steam. It's easy to play on modern
hardware.
It's
like $20?
If that. Oh, no. I'm talking about the original Space Marine.
Oh, yeah. That's
it might not even be $5. You can probably get it on GOG. Great game. The game that I'm talking about, Bolt Gun, is $20, brand new, awesome boomer shooter that you want to go back and like find the secrets in every level you complete because you get the score screen at the end. It has been amazing. And not only is it a direct sequel to Warhammer 40K Space Marine, the original game, but it is also a prequel to the sequel, Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2, that is coming out sometime in the next year-ish.
Yeah, super excited about that.
Maybe a little bit more. But yeah, can't recommend it enough. For $20, best $20 you'll spend this year, I'm guessing.
Okay. Over on my side of things, I've got a couple of things to hit real quick. The first one, I do kind of want to dial and go back to talking about Star Wars Jedi Survivor, because my experience with Jedi Survivor, I only started it this last week. And when I started playing it, unlike my normal ADD-ness, because when I start a game, I tend to want to zone into the game. I don't tend to put on other shows and shit until I'm like deep into a game and doing the repetitious tasks, right? So I enter into Jedi Survivor. I get into the first cutscene. I get through the first stage. I listen to the music. I hear them talk. I watch the recap the game gives you before the game starts. And something happens inside of me, something that rarely happens. It's like the Grinch's heart grew 3 sizes that day kind of thing.
Yep.
I realized in that moment as I was watching the recap how much I missed these characters. And it has been a long time since there has been a game where I've been like I was thinking about it the way that some people talk about Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Right? Like, these are characters that I got emotional, that I got to see them again. Like, right now, I haven't even met all the characters from the first game because we're all in disparate places. Spoiler for the first 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
But getting to run into the first character, who I won't tell you who it is, in the way that they react to each other, in the way that there's this sense of family that's like, you got to come home and see part of your family.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that that character, who's normally a very grumpy person, just embraces you and says, I've missed you. There's a bed waiting for you. And you go, no, I have a thing to do. And he goes, no, I see how tired you are.
Yeah.
Eat and go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my fucking heart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God. And so as I'm playing this game, I'm sitting here going, give Cal Kestis a TV show, a movie, and anything.
Yeah.
This game is so... I was like 3 hours into this game thinking to myself, all I want this studio to do is to be given all the money in the world so that they're all paid very, very well and can live very comfortably and do not have to crunch, and they can continue making these games for the rest of my life and I will be happy.
Oh yeah, I would love to be playing like the 7th one of these when I am like 50 years old.
Right, and just hearing like, yeah, all the developers were well taken care of. They were all reimbursed for their... Nobody crunched unless they wanted to stay over. Like, it was all...
Exactly.
Like that super giant model
super giant model for this team, and just let them keep making these.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, oh, man. Yeah, I would love a 10-episode Disney Plus series.
On Cal Kestis.
On Cal Kestis specifically. And you could call it Jedi Survivor because that's the essence of his character.
Yeah.
A wonderfully complex human being of a Jedi who struggles with things like, well, the Order wanted me to be a Jedi, but the Order is gone. What does that make me now?
Right. And so, like, spoilers for, like, again, the first, like, couple hours of the game. You go and meet this person from your past, and one of the conversations they have with you is, like, you need to just, like, settle down.
Yeah.
And there's this interesting bit of dialogue that's between the two of them where Cal is like, if I don't continue fighting the good fight against the Empire, then my master and their master's sacrifices are in vain.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person is talking on the other, the non-Jedi side of it, going, then when does it end?
Mm-hmm.
When do you get to be happy?
Yeah.
When do you get peace? And it's kind of a dark conversation.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of Andor. And for anyone who hasn't watched Andor, fucking stop... Pause right now.
Go watch
all of Andor and then come and unpause this.
Yeah.
I'll see you in 9 hours. But there's this line that is so perfectly delivered where one of the rebels says, you know, I burn my life every day for a sunrise I will never see. Mm-hmm. And like, that's what it means to be a rebel and to fight the empire every fucking day. You know, whether you are a spy or whether you're a Jedi, like, you know, trying to take encampments and win hearts and minds and remove the empire from the outer rim, like or whether you're on Coruscant and dealing art and passing intel from your rich clients to the rebellion, like you are like you're in it. You are the struggle and you may never get to see the world you were trying to build. And that is such a beautiful through line through all of this. That's why I think Cal Kestis should get a show. That's why I think if he did, he'd be a shoo-in for a movie. And we already have an actor for it. He's doing mocap for the role. He's very good.
Yep.
Like, come on. Like this is ripe. And also, yes, keep making these games for the rest of my life.
Yeah. So it's been fantastic. It's been heartfelt. I've felt moved. It's been a while since the game has moved me. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at. I kind of want to, once I complete it, I think I'd really kind of like to do a spoiler cast of just like us talking about the game.
Yeah, no, so yeah, but that should absolutely go.
If that's something y'all would like, please let us know. Yeah, you can get at GNGDcast on Twitter to let me know if that's what you want, or hit us up on Facebook or any other means that we have. Just real quick. The only other thing that I've been doing is I before Jedi Survivor, I wrapped up playing Dead Space for the first time.
Yeah, you did. Speaking of spoiler cast, we can do one on that
too. Yeah, that one's absolutely a fantastic game. Had a great time with it. Very pure, visceral survival horror, great body horror. I'm glad that I played the version that I did, because you told me that in the original version, the main character doesn't talk at all.
That is correct. He is a silent protagonist.
I would not have liked the game because the amount of story that I got from the main character was really what made the game for me. And so I think that if I went back and played the original, I just wouldn't like it.
Yeah. There was, I mean, all of the game is still there in the original there, but I cannot in good conscience call it subtle, because it is just less. You just get less from him being a silent protagonist. But that was the style at the time. You were a guy in a suit. You were supposed to be able to put yourself in there, and that's kind of what made it scary. Right. At least that's what they were going for. They didn't think that the world of Dead Space was going to be so deep, but they were building lore into the game as they were going, and they just kept building it and building it. So I'm glad that this remake got made. It truly elevates the original material. And I'd love to, do like 30 minutes just talking about this game.
What a year for remakes.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, that is everything we have for the prelude this week. But stick with us, because we're going to be going into the news in the Weekly Raid.
The Weekly Raid.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show. It's time for the Weekly Raid, your roundup of this week's geek news. Kicking things off this week. So, in the past, we have heard all sorts of things being quote-unquote locked up in the Disney vault, never to be seen. But this week, we found out there is fully completed a 10-episode anime, but not just any anime, Aliens versus Predator.
Oh.
Fully done. Produced, voice acted, animated, sitting in the Disney vault. A 10-episode Aliens versus Predator series.
Oh.
Because the producer came out and said, yeah, so that whole Fox thing happened while we were wrapping up.
Yeah. So, that just kind of went in the vault.
An Aliens versus Predator 10-episode anime.
Let it out.
Like, 16-year-old me is, like, screaming internally right now, just being like, bro,
if there were release a real it. Vault, all of our 16-year-olds would rise from the timeline and Ocean's 11, that fucking vault. Like, my God.
But yeah, please, Disney, I know you don't listen to this show, but if you ever do, please release the Aliens versus Predator anime.
Yeah, if it's too violent for Disney Plus, put it on Hulu, whatever.
Sell it to HBO or Max or whatever the fuck it's called now. Yeah,
there you go. Fucking just let me watch it. There you go. That's all we want.
A 4-part docuseries about Tim Burton is in the works. Some of the people being interviewed for the series are Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter, Michael Keaton, Winona Ryder, Jenna Ortega, Danny Elfman, Christopher Walken, Danny DeVito. These are all names you associate with, obviously, Tim Burton.
For sure.
But it's going to be a docuseries about his life and his craft and the things that, why he does things the way that he does. Mm-hmm. That being said, I am going to say a controversial thing here.
Oh.
My concern, if you're doing a 4-part docuseries on Tim Burton, is this Tim Burton tends to be given credit for things that Tim Burton shouldn't be given credit for.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's...
Let's just have that conversation.
For sure. I mean...
Nightmare Before Christmas, if you didn't know, not really Tim Burton.
Nope. It had his name on it, the way that, like, Tom Clancy gets to have his name put on video games.
He was working on Batman Returns when Nightmare Before Christmas was being made. He basically just showed up occasionally and was just like, yeah, that's good, do some more of this, and then walked off. I have to go put Michelle Pfeiffer in spandex.
Yeah, it was a stop-motion animation movie. Like, unless you're Wes Anderson, you're not going to compose every scene yourself, because every scene is a... like 1/24th of 1 second that where you move a puppet.
And that's not the only project that he's worked on that he's been given credit for, but that's the big one.
Yeah.
So that's just I hope that if they are presenting a proper docuseries, they will stick to the facts.
Yeah. And you know, what would be great for them to do is to, like, just like for example, if you get to Nightmare Before Christmas, they could very quickly say, like, hey, Tim Burton, here's what he contributed to it. It's not a lot, but you probably came here to learn some shit about Nightmare Before Christmas. So here's a little bit about that.
Yep.
That I would love that.
Yeah, that'd be great. The 1993 film Needful Things by Stephen King is getting a 4K re-release next month. But more importantly, the reason this is such a big deal is that back in the day, there was a 3-hour cut of this film.
Oh, Jesus.
But it only ever aired on TV a couple times.
Okay.
So instead of it releasing on VHS with a 3-hour cut, it was the theatrical version on that. But it was one of those things that
hard to find.
For the kids, there was a time where I think I want to say, like, it was like TNT or something like that, would occasionally show movies with additional content in them.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody ever saw that version of the film unless you, like, watched it on TNT.
Yeah, no, I remember that. They would, like, put what were DVD features, or but, like, that didn't exist,
right?
But they would, like, throw them in the way that, you know, I think it was FX used to do, like, on Saturday when they were just throwing movies on, they would throw in some extras after it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's what they're doing, is that for the first time, what they call the TV version, but that's the fully, like, recorded version of the movie. That being said, Needful Things, not a story that everybody loves. It is, in fact, one of my favorite Stephen King stories of all time.
And you haven't seen it, and I'm not going to ask you to watch it because I know how that turns out, but the best representation of Needful Things ever happened in Rick and Morty.
I've watched Rick and Morty.
Oh.
Yes. I'm caught up to, like, the newest season, I guess.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
There's a whole thing about Rick and
Morty. To me, that was pretty much how you tell the Needful Things story. Yep. The curses. You pay with the curses, right? Like people would figure that shit out instantly and be like, oh, but...
Yes.
But I still want the thing. I can game the system.
Yes, exactly.
This is an incomplete system. I can fix this.
All right, moving on. Soon-to-be-released game Street Fighter VI announced this week that they have a partnership with the fast food chain Chipotle. I'm going to say that word so much here.
Oh, no.
There will be a fighting game tournament with a $30K prize pool and free Chipotle for a year for the top two teams, with the top two teams being given an all-expense-paid trip to EVO 2023 coming up. But also, it was revealed that at certain times of the year, if you purchase a meal at Chipotle, you will earn fighter coins, which are the premium currency inside of Street Fighter VI.
It should be. Some sort of crime to suggest that someone go to Evo while full of Chipotle. It's just mean. Here, eat Chipotle for free for the next 3 weeks and then go into a stadium full of other gamers and play Street Fighter with them. This is the stuff of college pranks. This is, like, Revenge of the Nerds level comedy. Like, what? How is this real?
Because they gave you the money to do it.
Everyone's poor asshole at Evo. God damn.
It's more the people that are, just everybody that's around them.
Yeah, too. Well, that's the thing. Like, they're making them all want free Chipotle, so they're all going to go. God damn.
It was announced this week. Mortal Kombat had a big announcement this week that the sequel to Mortal Kombat 11 will be called Mortal Kombat 1. This game essentially resets the lore of the Mortal Kombat universe. Johnny Cage will have access to a Jean-Claude Van Damme skin through the Combat Pack DLC. Originally, between Street Fighter being released and Mortal Kombat being released, I was going to make a joke that, you know, gamers, fighting gamers, were eating good this year. Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah. That's...
After the last section, I don't know if we can follow up.
I don't know if we are eating good this year.
Well, whoever's really good at Street Fighter isn't.
The Battle Royale Vampire the Masquerade Blood Hunt is coming to an end after 1 year of service. The developers Shark Mob have promised they're going to keep the servers online for people to play, but there will be no updates in the future.
Right. I mean, that's nice of them. Some people really like the game. They can still play it. That is old school, and I respect and appreciate that very much. On the other side of that, I played the game a little bit, and I understand why it is not profitable.
It was rough. It was rough. I had fun with it while I played it, but it's not for everybody. Also, the Battle Royale space is so just
bloated.
Bloated right now.
Oversaturated.
Yeah. Steam is now offering 90-minute game trials on selected games. The first of these is this year's remake of Dead Space, which we talked about earlier. You can basically play as much of the game as you want for 90 minutes.
I love that. I mean, this is a really good way to get people to stop using refunds as a way to try out a game. Because you got 2 hours, and if you didn't like it after 2 hours, you quit.
Mm-hmm.
And you refunded the money you had already paid for the game. That's shitty, both to the developer who thinks they made a sale and then didn't, but also to the person who has to fork over $60, but 70 at maximum, and then bring it back into their account in order to try a demo.
Yeah.
This is shitty for both people.
Exactly.
So 90-minute demo, amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, this is really good. This is a great idea. And Sony has the same thing, but it's behind a paywall. They should remove that paywall.
Mm-hmm.
Let your gamers try a game for 90 minutes, and if they don't like it, they can just not buy it. And that's a good idea. I think it will sell more copies rather than less, as long as you release a game that isn't fucking broken.
Now, mind you, not every game on Steam is going to have the 90-minute, you know, opt-in. It's going to be per developer. They can decide, you know, hey, we want to give people a 90-minute demo of our game. You know, it's exciting. It's fun. I'm glad that people are doing it.
It's a great idea. There are a lot of games that I do want to try when they show up on Steam.
All right. Now it is time for the section that will not die on our show. That's right. It is time for Blizzard. Are you okay? Let's start with the purchase news. So the Microsoft buyout of Activision Blizzard King has been approved in 37 countries. And most recently, the European Union approved the deal. However, right after that happened, the UK's Competition and Markets Authority, or CMA, moved to block the $69 billion buyout. So Microsoft is currently filing an appeal over their decision because the CMA's argument isn't over gaming rights or monopolies. It's based around the idea that Microsoft, due to this buyout, will have a large share of the cloud gaming market.
Yeah, like a very large share.
Right. But I think that that's a pretty weak leg to stand on.
Well, so what they're... The when you read the opinion that they put forward, it's basically the cloud gaming market as of right now is full of very tiny actors and like one or two big ones. Sony, Microsoft, Activision, Blizzard. That's pretty much it. Twitch, you know, which is Amazon. You can't even count like EA and Ubisoft in there. And Steam doesn't really hold a big space in cloud gaming at all. It's just whatever games want to be part of cloud gaming and are on Steam, like fucking do it yourself. Steam just sells games. Like
you have like Nintendo's cloud service basically.
Right. And that is still very, very young and only applies to people with Switches, which I know is a lot.
Yeah.
But the adoption rate for cloud gaming inside the Switch market is minuscule compared to something like Microsoft already. So what they were saying is if you combine Microsoft and Blizzard, that would be like the equivalent of, you know, back in the day, combining like Time Warner and AT&T, which we did, and that we should not have because it ruined a lot of things, would be the equivalent of taking like Google and Amazon and being like, of course you can merge. Why would that be a problem?
Right.
Oh, wait, this one company controls literally everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what they were saying, is that this inside the cloud gaming space will give them control of most of the market. And that is not okay. According to us, in my opinion, they didn't pay off the wrong person, because that's all of this is.
Right.
In every country, in all 36, you think any of them give a shit? Do you think America gives a shit? Like whether or not this is good or bad for the industry is going to be a matter of opinion. Mm-hmm. Does it make a gaming monopoly? No, there are a lot of fucking gaming companies and even more gaming studios and even more development groups that actually make video games. So no, it wouldn't create a monopoly market-wise that way. I think they failed to pay off the wrong person, and they were like, well, I can put my thumb on this right now until someone gets me my money. So I have predict very soon this will go ahead and go through.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, finally, this week, Blizzard came out and announced that the huge PvE mode of Overwatch 2, the thing that everyone was looking forward to in the sequel, has been canned. Now, there will be story elements introduced to the currently running game, but not to the extent that was promised. Many Overwatch content creators are extremely angry over this announcement. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so.
Yeah. I mean, how do you put this? When they said, hey, we're going to make Overwatch 2, a lot of people were like, fucking why? If you want to improve the graphics, make it a patch.
Yeah.
If you want to add content to the game, make it a patch. I paid $30 for this game, or $40, or some of us like $60. Mm-hmm. And then bought, skins if you bought a bunch of loot boxes. I certainly bought my fair share, mostly around the holidays when they were special loot boxes. But, I threw $20 in now and then, even though I paid for the game. And then the collector's edition. They're like, Overwatch 2. And you're like, okay, like, please, like, maybe don't split the community. Like, this is a problem. They're like, no. Look, it's going to be free to play. It's going to be all the same Overwatch. And if you had the game, you can just go into this one. And you would say, there's still no reason for you to do this. Stop it. And then they said, no, wait. We're adding PvE. We're adding skill trees to every character. We're adding PvE modes that you can go in and like have cool battles and missions and fight and, level up your character and unlock new skills with them and have a great time with your friends, like being overpowered against a bunch of PvE enemies and living your Overwatch fantasy while we expand the lore and introduce new characters and new maps, and that's going to bleed right back into the multiplayer and everything's going to be amazing. And you're like, oh, okay, fine. That sounds really cool. And all of that's Overwatch 2. Yeah. And it's free. Yeah. Yeah, sounds good. So we've waited 5 years while playing this game with no meaningful content updates while they developed Overwatch 2. While we did, we got nothing, and Overwatch League was going on, but the game was getting stale, the meta was getting stale. They changed it through patches to the game because Overwatch 2 was coming. And then we heard, okay, Overwatch 2 is here. We're doing Overwatch 2. Let's look. It's not ready yet, but we're going to release the multiplayer first. We're going to release the multiplayer now. And remember, it's free and you're going to get in and you're going to love it. It's 5-man teams. The whole game is basically changed, but we think for the better. We're going to get the Overwatch League in here. Look, the rest of it is coming. Don't worry. Sit here and play Overwatch 2. Here's your update. Aren't you happy? The rest is coming. And we're like, okay. And finally this week, they're like, everything that we said that made any of this worth anything, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
That's the news we got this week. We're just, nah. We're like, what you have now is Overwatch 2. Here's what we're going to do for the next 3 seasons, 6 to 8 months of Overwatch. New maps, new heroes, maybe a CG trailer here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Drink it up, bitches. Like, I don't understand how when a game comes out and is broken, you at least get an apology.jpg.
Right.
This was announced in a dev stream from a bunch of guys sitting working from home while we looked at like the closet behind their kitchen. Mm-hmm. I have absolutely nothing against working from home, and I think everyone should do it. But like, it like if a company was saying, "Hey, this thing we promised you, we're not giving it to you," they might put on a fucking shirt with a collar and like sit in an office with a Blizzard logo behind them and be
give
like,
you a fucking apology.
Hey, y'all, from all of us, we're sorry. Like, this is fucking nonsense. Mm-hmm. This is rude. I was looking forward to this content, and it's the only reason I supported any of this, and now it's gone. I understand why the community that deeply loves this game. We're talking about creators who have made their living talking about and praising and building hype and enthusiasm mm-hmm. for this game, who just are releasing 20, 30 minute, hour long videos being mm-hmm. like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah,
I feel completely betrayed, and I feel like they talked about it in such a way that it's just going to pass the news cycle and be memory hold forever in a week. And this deserves more than what it's getting.
Absolutely.
From the company.
Absolutely. And we definitely have a lot more opinions about that. And if that's something you would like just to really spend like a deep, get into a deep dive about, you know, go ahead and hit us up on Patreon or hit us up on Twitter. Talk to me directly about it. And maybe we'll see about just carving out time to make a special episode for it, where we just talk about our experiences with Overwatch in the past to the present. And our experiences with Overwatch aren't just as players. We are people that have worked within the Overwatch community.
Yeah.
So we have feelings.
Yeah.
But we don't have time to talk about those feelings today. So that's everything that we have for the news this week. But stick with us as we get into the PlayStation Showcase in the Boss Room.
Boss Room.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show. This is the Boss Room, our main topic for the week. Sometimes related to the news, sometimes not. So this last week was the PlayStation Showcase. And wow, what a show it was.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to go top to bottom on mm-hmm. this whole list. We're going to try and hit everything. Some things we may only have a couple things to say about it.
Yeah.
So just bear with us. There was a lot. It was over an hour long, and we need to talk about just fucking everything that happened. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to go from the beginning to the end. Here we go. First up, they showed a new IP from a new studio called Haven. It's called Fair Games, and it's basically a heist shooter. We only got the cinematic for it, but it's kind of like a cyberpunky heist shooter.
Yeah, it felt very much like almost like an extraction shooter, but more focused on a singular goal. Like if everyone got the same mission.
Can you define what an extraction shooter? Because that's going to come up a lot today.
Oh, yeah. So Escape from Tarkov, if anyone's familiar with it, is an extraction shooter. Showdown is an extraction shooter. What an extraction shooter is, it is a game where in a multiplayer setting, there is a large map and there is loot on that map. And teams of one or up to three or five, depending on whatever game you're playing, go into this map and try and grab the thing they want and leave. Always there are NPCs on this map. Some of them threatening, some of them non-threatening and cannon fodder. And when you shoot, your goal is to eliminate your threats, maybe eliminate a boss for good loot, and be quiet about it, because the more noise you make, the more people might come and find you and wait in ambush to kill you.
So there are other
you.
Players that you're trying
lots
to
lots and lots of other players. Like I said, teams of one, three, or five. Mm-hmm. And there are multiple teams of one, three, or five that mm-hmm. go into this map. So everyone wants that boss's loot. Mm-hmm. And there may only be two bosses on the map, and there may be five teams on the map. So the idea mm-hmm. is you go in and you have to leave. If you die in the map, your character is dead. They get nothing when they leave. But if you can get in, get what you want, and extract without another team killing you for the loot that you have that they want, then you get to keep it. Then you get rewards, then you get to upgrade your character, maybe some kind of base, maybe some kind of stats. This is an extraction shooter. It's a really interesting and fun game mode. I don't think Escape from Tarkov was the first one, but it's certainly the most popular. But there are a lot of these types of games around.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just a cinematic. It looked fun.
It looked fun, yeah. The idea of going into a game like this and there being like, there's only one goal. There's this vault you have to break into and clear. It's like, and you have to steal the thing. Okay, there are three teams trying to do it. Oh, and like the vault is heavily guarded by someone who will kill all of you. And like a whole team of like, you know, miscreants around them. It's like, oh, yeah. So suddenly this is complicated and fun. It seems cool. I will definitely try it.
Next up was Helldivers 2. You're familiar with the original?
The original Helldivers was a top-down twin-stick shooter that was very much a PvE group-based game. Basically, you would have teams of up to three who could level up and like get different weapons and get different loadouts, and you'd drop them on a planet, and they would kill aliens and accomplish goals that were randomized every day and every map based on just, you know, who they were and what their level was. And you could choose your level of difficulty. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this was a very hardcore game in that this top-down twin-stick shooter always had friendly fire on. So if you're in a desert with two of your friends and you shoot at an alien and your friend happened to be in between you, you just shot your friend in the back. So maybe watch your fire.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a grenade? Oh, no. Oh, you have a flamethrower? Jesus fucking Christ, dude. You just wiped out your whole team carelessly. Like, yeah. There's a lot of that. Oh, you decided to call in a drop. This is the beauty of Helldivers, is that you're on the surface of a planet and you have satellite support. Mm-hmm. So you call in a thing from space that, like, replenishes everyone's health, or maybe, like, calls in a bombing run on a big target. You better fucking hope none of your teammates are nearby, because if that ammo tank comes in and squishes your friend because he's not paying attention, you are now a team of two when you were a team of three. Wow. Yeah, so pay attention. The new Helldivers looks very cool. Instead of being a top-down twin-stick shooter, it looks like it is over-the-shoulder shooter, much like Resident Evil 4 and every game like that that came after it. Seems really cool. I loved the original. It felt very much like half Starship Troopers and I don't know, half a really good twin stick shooter. Like,
yeah, they definitely went for like a Starship Troopers vibe.
Yeah, the Starship Troopers vibe is real in this. Yeah. Like, that is an homage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, looks great.
Next up was a magical shooter by the Team Ascendant. It's called Immortals of Avium.
Yeah.
It's going to be released on July 20th. It's a very fast-paced magical shooter, kind of in the vein of like the old school like Hexen Heretic series.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely got that vibe with like the, we're shooting magic out of our hands, I'm a wizard, yeah, but also FPS vibe.
Yep.
And yeah, it moved really quick, like almost like Doom Eternal quick. So it seemed like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Next up was Ghost Runners 2, now with motorcycles. We know that it's just coming out in 2023. Hector, why would people care about Ghost Runner?
Ghost Runner is exactly what it says on the tin. It is a runner, but it meaning that you run from the beginning to the end of a level. There's probably a lot of parkour elements and some really like precise platforming involved. But in Ghost Runner, there are enemies, and the whole thing has a cyberpunk melange, you know? A sprinkling of spice, as you will. So you are in maybe like this, the main city in Blade Runner, and you are a person who runs along walls and ninja whips to like things in a cyberpunk dystopian future, and you kill people who get in your way, and you go from the beginning to the end of the level as fast as you can. And if you go really, really fast, you get put on a leaderboard. Mm-hmm. And if you're really, really, really fast, you'll get at the top of that leaderboard. This is a sequel to that, and there are motorcycles.
That's it.
That's it. It's another one of these, and there are motorcycles. And if that's your thing, I'm glad you have
you
something to look at. I played Ghost Runner. I loved it. I didn't finish it because it's not the type of genre I would devote my life to, but I still enjoy giving it a shot.
Nice. Next up is a game called Phantom Blade Zero. It's a samurai meets Bloodborne kind of game.
Yeah. I swear to God, when the trailer first started, I was like, no, it's too early in the show. This isn't like Ghost of Tsushima 2. So what's happening right now? Because like the graphics were really nice and there was like some samurai shit going on, but the vibe and the presentation was just a little off for being Ghost of Tsushima, but it was close enough that I thought about it, which says a lot for like how cool this game looks, because that's probably one of my favorite games ever. This looked really cool. It had a lot of personality on it, and I can't wait to see more. I mean, I'll definitely give it a shot.
Yeah. Team Giant Squid, the makers of Journey, made a new game called Sword of the Sea. And the only thing that I can tell you about this is you should look this game up, because it looks fucking gorgeous.
Oh yeah. Beautiful, beautiful art style. Unique. Interesting.
You could tell it's the makers of Journey.
Yeah, it had that DNA right there. When the water rolls the same way that the sand sea did in, you know, Journey, you feel that. Like, nothing nothing else looks and feels like that. Exactly. So it was just way too cool. Guy who had what looked like a sword and turned out to be a surfboard. Big fan.
That was so cool.
Big fan.
Yeah. The Talos Principle 2, if you weren't familiar with the first one, it's kind of a mist-riven, seventh guest old school puzzle type of thing.
Yeah, walking puzzler, I guess. I don't know what we call these, but it's, it's a first person, like, lost civilization puzzle game.
Yeah. And cool. The graphics look gorgeous. Everything about it looked fantastic. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Just more of the same. Let's see here. The developer of Gris, I believe the game is called, made a new game called Neva. Mm. And now everything about this trailer is very folklore feeling. And this is kind of a theme during a lot of these games. There was at least four or five of these games that I get a real big like folklore vibe to it.
Yeah.
I suggest if you would like to cry today, go look up the trailer for Neva, N-E-V-A, and watch it and then just have a cry about it. Because holy fuck, this trailer.
Yeah. There was, you're absolutely right. There was a lot of like post-apocalypse like type stuff, but also a lot of like nature coming back type stuff.
Yeah, very like Studio Ghibli adjacent kind of things.
Yeah, and this looks great. And Gris was an amazing game. It's on everything from Steam to your iPad to your Android phone to your Switch. And it is a platformer that is mostly about grief.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely beautiful. And this looked even cooler. Like the art style was a very Studio Ghibli.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah.
I've heard some people compare it to kind of like Princess Mononoke.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There was a lot of that in the art style for sure. Yeah.
I didn't know that this was a series, but there's a series called Cat Quest. There's a new one in the series. This one is pirate themed.
Yeah. It was.
It's kind of an RPG adjacent. There are cats.
The cats, they're pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, Caribbean.
Like beans?
Caribbean.
Yeah, the Caribbean.
10 out of 10.
It's too many cat puns at once. Yep. Also 10 out of 10.
Yep, there you go.
I can't wait for someone else to play that and me to be like, oh, okay.
That's cute. Yeah. The next game was called Foam Stars. It's basically Splatoon, but with soap.
Yeah, there was like someone pointed out that it's a Vegas theme, so it could be like champagne foam.
It's just soap foam. Here's the thing. I understand that as an adult, we see and know things that we maybe shouldn't. But I was like watching this trailer, and they kept using like the words like foam party, and I'm like, okay, but do people know what a foam party is?
Like, you know that there was during in 2020 there was a whole genre of Twitch channel. That was just hot tub, bubble bath, foam party.
Right. But also like a foam party in a nightclub, a very nasty, dirty thing in a sexual way is the way I mean that. So they're just like, yeah, foam party. And I'm like, a rape. So they're just like people fucking in the foam. Like
what? Like Jesus. Yeah.
Just don't Google foam party.
It's what we're saying. So Square Enix basically got up and said like, yo, we have Splatoon at home.
And that's exactly what it was.
And showed us foam party. And so here we are. Looked fun.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause Splatoon is fun.
Hector, tell me about the Plucky Squire.
The Plucky Squire is a very, very, very cool looking indie game where, and this is all just the impact I got from the trailer. You have a beautifully like rendered 3D environment where someone has placed a book down, and on the book in 2D in a beautiful ink as if it's written into a children's book is your character. And they walk forward and the ink changes and the person above the table turns pages and your character advances in the book and you're a 2D plane in the 3D world and you're like, oh, there's so much character and love to this. And you're like, oh man, someone loves this little fantasy game. And then your character walks off of the book onto the table and is now 3D and is now like moving up your desk and using a pencil that you have propped up on an eraser to like walk up onto the wall. Mm. And now they're 2D again. And it just goes and goes and goes until you're like, okay, no, I'm a full grown ass adult man. And not only do I, like, want to shed tears for my childhood at how fucking cool this is, but also I am 100% intrigued, and as a grown-ass adult human being, want to just dive into this because it looks so charming and cool and beautiful, and it's the type of game that as someone who at this point in my life intends to live it child-free makes me want to be like, I'd love to show this to a kid someday.
Yeah.
I would love to.
There was something
like,
about watching the trailer to that that made me think of like the kind of narration that you would get like in a silly version of Bastion or something that almost like, I don't know, it's hard to describe, that kind of unreliable narrator. Like if somebody was, nobody narrates this game.
No.
But the trailer looks like somebody, an unreliable narrator is just like, and so was walking through the park and then they jumped off the page.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's the thing. And suddenly it shifts from 2D to 3D and you're like, well, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah. Like what was this?
It's fascinating. The Plucky Squire is definitely one of those trailers that I believe you should definitely check out. Just go on YouTube and look at it because it's hard to describe, but holy crap, I can't wait for it.
Yeah, very cool.
Teardown is another game that I wasn't familiar with. It's one that already exists. It's coming to PS5.
Yeah.
It's of a genre that I was unfamiliar with the name of.
Yeah, so the thing about Teardown is that it's a heist game in that you have to like steal a thing and get away with it. And you're like, okay, fine. But the game is built in voxels entirely. And this is a 3D game, not a 2D game. So you can imagine how difficult that is. What's a voxel? Voxels are what you consider very tiny pixels, meaning that anything you make out of them is entirely destructible in a physics engine by nature of building it.
Right.
You don't build something and then program it to fall apart. You take a bunch of things that fall apart and build them into something.
Right. The best way I can describe it to somebody that's never seen a game like this before is like, it's fucking Legos, bro.
Yeah. Like, it's Legos. Like if I made a building in a voxel game and made a stick of dynamite and programmed it to do what it does, I don't have to decide that, like, I don't have to program the building to explode when I put the dynamite in it. I just have to put the dynamite in it and everything will take care of itself.
Right.
So what you have is a heist game where if the safe is on the floor on a second story, you blow a hole in the floor. And maybe you drive a truck through the first floor, blow a hole in the ceiling above you. When the safe falls into a truck, you drive the truck off the pier onto a boat and get away on the boat. Like, and all of this is destructible. Like, everything is so destructible that it affects the gameplay on principle, and that is a voxel game, and it from what I understand, it's some of the most fun you can have with a group of friends while just dicking around, because it's very easy to just ruin everything by putting explosives in the wrong place.
Right.
It's like, we need to bring that down to us. Okay, nope, too much dynamite, you blew it off on into the horizon, reload the level.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those.
So next up, so I'm going to set the scene for what I'm about to describe next. So the scene is Hector and I are at work in our office.
Yep.
We have a TV in our office and we've got the presentation playing. At the same time, I'm sitting in Discord with some friends and we're discussing every trailer as it is coming up. And this trailer comes up and it's like one animal exists and then that animal eats it. And then that animal is eaten by another bigger animal. And then that animal is eaten by a bigger animal. And we at this point in fucking Discord are just about to... We are seconds away from ripping in to this fucking trailer.
And then it was a dinosaur. And then it was a whale.
And then it got more and more ridiculous. And we're about to fucking just like tear this trailer a new asshole. And then Solid Snake showed up.
Yep. Just full on... Like beautiful new engine 3D rendered Solid Snake.
Metal Gear Solid.
Not Solid Snake.
Metal Gear Solid Delta.
It's Naked Snake.
It's Naked Snake.
It's Big Boss.
It's Big Boss.
It's, yeah.
It's Metal Gear Solid 3 in a new form.
Yeah, it is a remake to Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater. That is Metal Gear Solid Delta.
Snake with the original cast.
Original voice cast. As far as we can tell, it's like an upgraded, it's like a very nicely upgraded engine. Everything looks great. I don't know what to say, except I did not expect this.
Did not see this coming.
In a million years, I didn't see this coming. I think
Because that would mean Konami's doing something.
I think Konami saw that, like, oh, our old properties are worth money if we just run some love through them the way that they have with Resident Evil at Capcom.
I mean, we make fun of Konami a lot, and we are saying, like, oh, I can't believe Konami is doing this. But
fuck Konami.
Let's talk about the fact that, yeah, just this last October, we got the Silent Hill presentation.
True.
And I said during that episode, and it wasn't that far back, so you can actually listen to that one.
Yeah.
I said, if this Silent Hill thing works out, next Halloween we'll probably hear about a Castlevania, like new Castlevania. Oof. And I said, we might hear something about Metal Gear. We don't know. And Metal Gear was one that I was iffy on because there's the Kojima of it all hanging over there.
Yeah, exactly.
So who knows?
Yeah.
But here we are.
Yeah. The best analogy I have for this is you can't make a Souls game without someone like Miyazaki.
Right.
Like, he has all of it. He is, as far as we know, like, obviously a mountain of very talented people work on Souls games. But we have a central figure in which we say, this is a visionary because he has all of the things that make this game what it is.
Is he Bruce Springsteen because that is the boss?
Exactly. And we know Kojima to be the same. But again, we got a Demon's Souls remake from a company that didn't even have access to Miyazaki.
Absolutely.
Because they could pull everything they needed from the game, from the code, from the lore around the game.
And talk to them directly.
So whatever studio is, you know, integrating with Konami to remake this game, like, you can understand what Kojima wanted simply by playing the game and looking at it and looking at what it could have been and deciding maybe what they might want to change and improve.
Yeah.
Like, I am very excited to see what this could be. And I haven't said that about a Konami game in about a decade.
It's true.
So, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, after that, one big thing after another, there was a big trailer for Final Fantasy 16.
Yep, 16 comes out at the end of next month.
Looks good.
And, I'm gonna play the absolute shit out of it. If it runs at a decent frame rate on PlayStation, I'm gonna grab it on PlayStation. If not, I'm gonna grab it on Steam. I will be playing it day one.
I'm down.
Yeah.
October 17th, 2023. Alan Wake 2.
Ooh, I love the... I said this when we saw it. I love the Halloween-adjacent release because it looks like they're going with, like, a horror. It looks like...
Again, this looks like folk horror.
It does.
It has people with, like, tree antlers and shit, and I'm like, that's fucking folk horror.
Yeah, and I love the...
Of you who don't live in the horror sphere the way that I do, just so you know, folk horror is so hot right now.
Fuck yeah.
It is the Midsommars. It is all of that kind of, like, alien because it exists in other countries kind of horror.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Troll Hunter is a great example. Yeah, that type of stuff.
That's the kind of horror that's really hot right now in the indie scene.
Yeah, and so it has that. And, like, based on what we saw of the game, it had a real, like... Hey, yeah, we played RE2 Remake, and we learned some lessons.
Right.
Yeah, Remedy, we pay attention.
Yep.
And it's Remedy. So, like, the vibes, above all else, will be truly impeccable.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's what they do. You say whatever you want about Max Payne, say whatever you want about Alan Wake. You can call those games shallow and silly. You can say whatever you want about...
No. The vibes. The vibes.
Control.
Control, amazing. I talked about this when I played the Alan Wake remake. Because, like Dead Space, I didn't play it until the remake.
Yep.
And I remember talking on the show and also to you and saying, I got to the end of, like, chapter 2 or 3. And they do this thing at the end of the Alan Wake chapters where they, because they are chapters, they play a song and credits roll.
Mm-hmm.
And they played Poe's Haunted, a song that I grew up with, a song that is... seared into my brain that Spotify will never let me forget how much I listened to that song. A CD and an artist who I listened to obsessively because one of my favorite books growing up was House of Leaves.
Yep.
Poe is a fantastic artist, and that song is one of the best songs I have ever heard, and it is forever lodged into my head. And the end of that episode of Alan Wake kicks off with that song, and I went, I am fucking into this game. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Alan Wake 2, they're going to go for the same impeccable vibes.
Yeah.
Control is going to go for those vibes.
Yeah.
We're going to hear more from that imaginary band, the Viking band from Alan Wake.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Because there's this Viking band in Alan Wake, if you've never played it, and they made an entire, like, fake band, like the Gorillaz. Like, they are not a real existing band, but they are. And then in Control, they made a new song for Control to tie the two of them together, the Old Gods of Asgard.
The Old Gods of Asgard.
And I'm so excited to hear what they're going to do for this one.
Yeah, there's literally a scene in the original Alan Wake where you have to fight off a horde of enemies from a stage where the Old Gods of Asgard were playing. And remember, they're shadow monsters. So how do you fight a horde of shadow monsters? Stage pyrotechnics with a metal from a metal show.
Yes.
And it's one of the most epic things in any video game.
If you've not played Alan Wake, please, you're doing yourself a disservice. Buy the remake.
Yep.
And just, it's janky because the original's janky, but it's worth it.
It is.
We are almost done, but we have some more stuff to talk about real quick. Assassin's Creed Mirage.
Sure, whatever.
Another Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah, it looked like more of an Assassin's Creed game than Origins or...
It looks like old school Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, it looks like Assassin's Creed before they turned it into a basically mid-RPG.
Yeah.
Back when it was still about parkour and assassination. And, I mean, I'm into that. I loved the Assassin's Creed franchise. I played every one all the way to credits up through Black Flag. Yeah. And I played a little bit of Liberty and I played a little bit of the British one.
Yeah.
And they had their charm. But after that, I completely fell off the series because it changed so drastically. This one looked a lot more like the games that I loved originally.
And
so
the actress who played Avasarala is in it. So,
Shoren. Ashlew is the best thing I can do for your last name. I'm sorry. I promise I'll Google it and learn it.
Let's see. The makers of the game Night of the Woods made a new game called Revenant Hill. Very brief trailer for that.
Yeah. Sounds good. I mean, we're into the horror. And it comes, I think it was another one of those games that came out around October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's another horror adjacent one. Looks super fun, super indie. Cygames, who are the creators of Grand Blue, those Grand Blue Fantasy is a fighting series.
Yep.
They're making a new game that is set in that universe, but is not a fighting game.
Correct.
It looks like Phantasy Star Online or something kind of adjacent to that. It's kind of an action RPG
online. A small group MMO style, like Phantasy Star was. And the last Grand Blue Fantasy game that was made by Arc System Works, and it was a fighter.
Yep.
Like the guys who make Guilty Gears. And, you know, it had its own following.
Yeah.
So, I bet this will be good.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. Yeah. We showed off Street Fighter VI Story Mode. It's Street Fighter VI.
I can't wait because, like, Story Mode's what I want from a game like that.
Yep.
And I know I'm in the minority there, but it's sometimes I get things. Sometimes I get nice things.
There's this game called Ultros. It is a side-scrolling platformer Metroidvania that basically, and I'm not trying to be like weird about it. It looks like a game that was made for somebody who took either mushrooms or was on a lot of LSD.
Yeah, like the only way I can describe this game, there was a game, and I believe it's called like The Void Video. Yeah. There, it's something Void or maybe just Void or like Black Void. Anyway, it has an incredibly trippy art style. And like, it was the only thing that I could possibly compare what I saw to. Mm. It's just
you
like,
and I. You and I recently went to a concert.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We, yeah. Yeah. We
went to Psych Fest here in Austin.
Yeah, it's a full-on just psych metal show. We had Acid Dad. We had the Black Angels. We had a ton of great bands, and it's mostly just like people getting fucking trippy with their guitars, and we loved every second of it. If that show had a video game, that's what we were looking at.
Yeah, that's exactly what this was.
Yeah.
Let's see. There was a game shown called Tower of Fantasy. It's kind of this anime girl mech RPG thing. It's actually already on PC. Yeah. So it was just a coming to PlayStation thing.
Yeah, cool.
Capcom showed off Dragon's Dogma 2.
Oh, yeah. Dragon's Dogma 2 looks very cool. Capcom is using their beautiful RE engine to make another Dragon's Dogma game.
I don't even know what the first one's about.
But it's about, it's like mid-level fantasy, but when you fight a griffin, you can climb on its back and stab it in the ass.
Okay.
And then, like, that's the gimmick.
I dig it.
Yeah, that's basically the whole thing. And while I tangentially played the first one, I didn't really put much time into it.
Sure.
But this looks cool. And okay. I love shit like this, so I'm into it.
All right. Next up was the PSVR time. We're not going to spend too much time on these, but we'll just knock them out. Five Nights at Freddy's Help Wanted 2.
Yeah. No, I love the idea of having VR. It's probably not out of my reach right now since I have a whole room dedicated to my computer at the moment. If I were to get VR, I would never, ever, ever play a horror game in it because I am a fucking coward. And if something jumps out at me, I'm going to fall over and, you know, break my head against my window or something.
My only concern is I do have the room for it, but I also have cats that might try to, like, run under my legs while I'm playing.
Oh, yeah. You would step on, like you would not be able to not step on cats.
Yeah.
Like while you were playing.
Speaking of horror, Resident Evil 4 VR.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's Resident Evil 4 VR already exists. This was Resident Evil 4 remake VR.
That's true. Yep.
And let's not forget that Resident Evil 4 has been remade over and over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Most recently with its full remake by Capcom. But right before that, they remade the original by putting it in VR.
Mm-hmm.
In so much of a way that, like, when you pull out your knife and stab, it is a button on a controller in the game. But in this game, you hold the knife. You can juggle it. Mm-hmm. You can juggle with it. You can, in the game, you have to, like, shoot a nest and an egg falls out of it and then you go pick it up. In this game, you can toss your gun up in the air with one hand, grab it in the other, shoot the nest and catch the egg that falls out of it in your other hand. Like, this is the what they added to this video game that we had all played 20 fucking years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Putting it into the remake is just a massive stroke of brilliance, and it made me, and I know I just said I wouldn't play a horror game in VR, this doesn't count. It's Resident Evil 4. It's not scary. But I deeply want to play RE4 Remake in VR. That sounds like the best way to play the game. I already bought it, and I haven't finished it, and I want to get VR so I can play it in VR.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care that I haven't finished the version that I bought. That's how big of, like, a difference this is. I want this.
Yeah.
It's sure. Very cool.
A zombie survival game called Arizona Sunshine 2 was shown. Very cool. One of the people I was talking to in Discord, they actually have Arizona Sunshine 1, and they've had really good things to say about it. It's just I kill zombies. Very fun, not horror. Yeah. Like, there's this whole bit where they grab a zombie head and they make the zombie head talk.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you could do that in game. You literally can, like,
you just
pick,
like,
up the zombie
one
head.
Hand grabbed his jaw, the other hand just pushes it up and down. Okay, so here's my thing about this game. This is a game in which you walk out into the street in the zombie apocalypse and mutilate unthreatening zombies.
Yes.
If I was in the zombie apocalypse.
Yes.
And I saw someone doing that.
Uh-huh.
I would not let them back into my camp.
No.
That is absolute fucking psycho behavior.
That is crazy pants.
That is
pants on head crazy.
That is pants off ass on head crazy. And they're not allowed to come back in and eat dinner with me.
Right.
Why don't I feel the same way about people who play this video game? Like, there is a VR game, and I don't know where it comes from, a VR Steam store that is literally a murder simulator. Mm. It puts a model in front of you and gives you guns and realistically models the damage you do. And that's the entire game. It's a room that you spawn people into and kill them in.
Wow.
And it that's a real thing. And if it existed on a screen with a mouse and keyboard, people would be like, oh, it's some kind of weird physics thing. You can put it into your video game. You can play with it. And you can decide if it makes your game feel good. When you do it in VR, you're a fucking psychopath.
It is a murder simulator.
That is a murder simulator.
Right.
They have peripherals with force feedback. It's a murder simulator. Like, that's kind of how I feel about this Arizona game. Yep. I'm uncomfortable with it.
Next up, they showed was a game called Crossfire Sierra Squad. It is a much more hardcore shooter, very more like military focused.
Yeah, like Call of Duty, but even more into the simulation space. Not quite Arma, maybe something like Rainbow Six.
Yep.
Right? This I understand. This is a competition-based shooter where you can like use realistically modeled weapons to compete in a game where you have to duck and shoot and understand what cover is and understand your gear and right. react with your body in quick and interesting ways. This is not a murder simulator. This is a video game.
The last thing they showed off was just more Beat Saber. They were just like, bro, Beat Saber.
Love Beat Saber. They showed off that there is a Queen Beat Saber, right? Yeah. The Queen song pack. Please pay for it and don't just download it and play it on Steam through piracy.
Right.
Yeah.
We're almost done here. So there was the Bungie section. So the first thing they showed off was Marathon.
Marathon. Yeah.
The game that existed on the Macintosh. If you're unfamiliar with Marathon, let me history you with this one real quick. So back post the original Doom, there was a little company called Bungie. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to make a first-person shooter in the vein of Doom, but they wanted to give it a really complex story, and they wanted to make it really difficult, like hard as fuck. Right? And they made a couple of
survival before there was survival.
Yeah, survival before there was survival game. And they made this game called Marathon. And it was one of the only first-person shooters that I played. And I only played it when it came out on the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. Got halfway through it and said, no, fuck that shit. I'm out. Not because it's scary, because that shit's hard, yo.
It's hard. Every mistake you make will haunt you for the rest of the game.
You can put yourself into a fail state real easy with that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That being said, a new trailer was shown off for Marathon by Bungie. You talked about this kind of theme earlier, right? The extraction game?
Yeah, it is an extraction shooter. So, Marathon, you gave the history of the game. Mm. I'm going to give you a little bit of the lore. Marathon is ridiculously hard sci-fi. Like, if you took The Expanse and put like a way bigger dick on it, mm-hmm. like Marathon is the story of what civilization is thousands and thousands and thousands of years in the future, where like people have occupied moving asteroids and built ships into them, and these giant millennium civilization ships where people will. Where entire civilizations will be born, live, and die on these ships as they move throughout the universe. That is a marathon. And everything revolves around this and revolves around alien species you encounter.
By the way, this game does tie directly into the lore of Halo.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely directly into it. And there are symbols from Marathon that appear in Halo, like, perfectly. Like,
even Destiny, I think,
like,
too.
Like, yeah, like, and Destiny, yes. Like, these are things directly from Marathon because Bungie did Marathon first. Mm. Anyway, so Marathon is very old school and very, very hard sci-fi. The third game is literally all about time travel, where you experience the same events over and over again, but with different past starting points, so the events are completely different. It is a mind trip, and you only understand what's happening through the context clues of, like,
you only understand what's happening by going onto YouTube and watching somebody dissect this fucking game.
Right, because if you sat there and read it all and you knew who Durandal was, then maybe you would like understand half of what was going on.
Right.
But yeah, you need a primer style, someone outlined a timeline map with like points of interest and like colored lines for the different paths you took. Like, yeah, it's wild. So what you have here is Bungie, recently acquired by Sony, delivering on their promise of making good multiplayer shooters for Sony, because that is what's lacking in their overall catalog. Right. So you get Marathon, the extraction shooter. We talked early about extraction shooters, but here's what you have. You have a sci-fi game in which you're mostly shooting and extracting loot, built by Bungie, who makes, in my opinion, the tightest shooting mechanics in all of gaming. Mm-hmm. The guns that are the most fun to shoot in video games, making a Tarkov-like, basically.
Right.
I can't think of a better thing for them to do. As long as it's not overly filled with bullshit like Destiny and not like overly...
Microtransaction-y?
Microtransaction-y. This will be a very, very cool game. And I can't wait to dive back into the world of Marathon. And I really hope people get into it. And one day we get the like tight, well-paced, interesting story of another Marathon single-player first-person shooter. This may be a path to that. So everyone just vote with your wallets. Say you want more of this because this is good. If it's good. I've never seen Destiny release something completely broken. Destiny. I've never seen Bungie release something completely broken before.
Because they're not 343.
Because they're not 343. And then they're not, you know, Arcane or whoever. But like, yeah, you know, I feel like if they release a product, they're going to put their heart and soul into it. And I really hope to see the polish on this game, because if it is polished and it is good and people like it and people adopt it, we can get more Marathon in our lives. And I love Marathon. So let's see it. The lore to me, far, far more interesting than anything in Destiny and anything in Halo. Marathon fucking slays.
And the second thing that Bungie showed was just their, hey, here's our new Destiny stuff. Hey, guess what? Nathan Fillion's back.
Yep. Cade Six is back. The second someone said he died, I was like, oh, he'll be back. And
Sony money.
I never talked to anyone about it, so I was never told, no, you're wrong, or no, they really killed him. Like, I never had that a chance to have a conversation with anyone. But I'm going to be smug about it anyway, because I was like, yeah, he's coming back. And here he is. He's back. Because why would you kill you're like everyone's favorite character and not bring them back later to uproarious applause. So here we are.
All right. The final, so we'll just knock this out real quick. They did like a hardware section that was weird. They showed the PlayStation 5 streaming machine where it's like you can stream your PS5.
It's a PS5 controller with a small 1080p screen in it that allows you within the same Wi-Fi network as your PlayStation 5.
Right.
To stream from your PS5 to this device so you can continue playing games while you poop. Or if you're in bed with your husband, wife, or NB in between. Or if you're outdoors and your family's having a really boring, you know, get together and you're just, you know, want to sit in the garage and keep playing your video games. Yeah. That is what this is for. That's all it is. It seems really expensive for something like that, but also there are certain people who would really want it based on their situation. So
it's weird.
It's weird. But at the same time, it's no more weird and no less acceptable than Sony's new, like, accessibility controller.
That's true.
Right? I mean, it's a device that helps more people play games the way they want to and gives them access when they normally don't have it. So, like, it's fine.
It's true.
It's fine. It's not for everyone. And I think Sony knows that. A lot of people who were commenting about it don't seem to know that it's not for everyone. It's not for everyone. If you want one, you know who you are. Yeah. And you can't wait to get one. And if you don't want one, then you know, don't get one.
Sony showed off their new earbuds.
Yeah. They're getting
honestly, earbuds. If they're good, I would get a pair. I just don't know if they're going to be good or not.
Yeah. They said they pair seamlessly from like PlayStation to PC to phone to whatever. So
they're
yeah.
Bluetooth. So
sounds great.
All right. Final thing. Final thing to discuss. Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2. How do we feel about Spider-Man 2?
Well, Insomniac, the company,
those magnificent bastards,
they are what we call in the modern times fucking wizards. Like, this trailer, you could tell the instant you looked at it, oh, this is in game, this is gameplay, and you're like, oh, cool. And So first of all, they started off with like a jungle scene and I'm like, oh, this is gorgeous. This is cool. Like this is really lush looking. I wonder if this is like some kind of Monster Hunter game or something. Cause I saw a guy walk by with like a furry arm.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, are we getting more Monster Hunter? Yeah, let's go.
Weird thing to end the showcase on.
Yeah. Sure. Weird thing to end the game on. Cause they said it was the last trailer, but then like I saw the full outfit as they panned out and I was like, oh, that's Kraven the Hunter. We're getting Spider-Man. Yeah. Let's look at some Spider-Man.
Mind you, we went out for Tex-Mex or Mexican food like that day.
Yep.
And I was like, I guarantee you this is going to be about Spider-Man. Like, yeah. Spider-Man is going to be a big deal.
We're
going to
get some Spooderman.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And we did. And it showed up and it's like, oh, that's Kraven the Hunter. Okay, we're going to see Kraven the Hunter. And then we're going to get a little story beat about why he's in New York. Mm. And then he's hunting the lizard. And we're like, okay, so we're tracking that. And then just like, through what we know to be, because we have a Spider-Man remake on PS5 and all its glorious graphical fidelity and like fast frame rate and like ability to instantly load a new save and all of that good shit. Mm-hmm. And we're moving through and everything looks a lot better and the lighting model is gorgeous.
Oh God.
And like everything looks good and it looks like they're tracking the lizard and out pops Peter Parker, not Miles Morales. And he's in the Venom suit.
Yep.
And we're like, oh, fuck. He's got the symbiote on. We're going to do some fucking symbiote suit Spider-Man.
And the symbiote is, by the way, I love the fact that they chose the art style that they did. Because normally when you picture the symbiote suit, it's always just kind of like completely flat.
Yeah.
But what they did is they actually went for more of an Agent Venom style, which if you're unfamiliar with that look in the comics, Agent Venom is not Peter Parker. It's Flash Thompson who got his like legs blown off during an operation in Iraq.
Yeah.
But the Agent Venom suit looks more armored. Mm-hmm. So it's still like it's conforms to the skin, but like around the jaw and stuff, you could tell it looks like armor, not
like you're wearing a helmet or shoulder pad. It has texture to it.
Exactly.
It doesn't just look like a weird muscle suit where you should probably see a wiener outline, but you don't. Like, it looks like a suit. But it also like does all the things you would expect a symbiote suit to do. Yes,
absolutely.
So you show that and they showed a really cool chase and a bunch of great gameplay. And then he's getting away and he's like, oh no, he's getting away. I can't get there fast enough. Hey, Miles, what are you doing? And then we swapped to Miles.
That was so cool.
And now you're playing as Miles, and it was literally a button press away. They showed the button prompt, so we know we press a button, and now we're Miles.
Yep.
And now we're flying across the city from a different direction and, like, just fucking moving as fast as Miles possibly can, just, like, soaring across the cityscape that we've seen before. Faster than we ever have before.
There's a wingsuit where you glide. There's a wingsuit. It was so good.
He swings away and then he glides and he has electrical powers. And then we see fight scenes where you get to switch back and forth between the Spider-Man.
Oh, it's so good.
And like,
it was like pure Spooderman action everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere there were drones and there was a water chase and a car chase. There were boats.
The lizard was basically like the size of Godzilla.
Yeah, you had a lizard like swimming through the water, taking people out like the world's hungriest crocodile.
Right.
It was just absolute wizardry. This is everything I wanted from a PS5 and they're doing it.
Oh God, everything about Spider-Man 2 is just like chef's fucking kiss.
Yeah.
Wow.
Watch that trailer. I'm just like shoving it in my veins. First day. Like, if I get cool suits, I'll pay $100, whatever.
I think the big question, we were sitting
in Discord. I'm bending over.
And we're just like, what caused Peter to get the symbiote?
But yeah, I can't wait to find out.
Like, that's the thing. I'm so invested in the story because the first trailer we got for this game, like, you know, half a year to a year ago was just like, oh, hey, Spider-Man 2, here's Venom.
Yeah.
And now we get this new trailer. Venom's nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
Peter's got the symbiote. And we're going, wait a minute. Why is this happening?
Yeah, I feel like they gave us a little snippet of what's going to be a very large story, much like they did with the first game.
Right, and that was kind of and this is theory and speculation, and we only do that in the boss room when we do our theory and speculation. In the very first game, we had, when we got the first trailers for Spider-Man, we saw Mr. Negative.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh God, Mr. Negative is like the big boss, blah, 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 blah. When you played the game halfway through, you realize, no, he's not.
Yeah, he's absolutely not.
It's really
a
Doc Ock thing.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling they might be fucking with us in the same way here, where it's like, oh, it's Kraven the Hunter. Kraven the Hunter's the big bad.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
No, it's
probably
not.
Venom or somebody else.
Yep.
It could be the lizard for all we know.
Yeah,
we don't know.
I mean, we could end the game like getting ready for some fucking carnage or something.
They could blow us all out the water and say, like, hey, you've already seen Kraven the Hunter and, like, the lizard together. Maybe the Sinister Six is a fucking thing in this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe Spider-Man.
What?
With a symbiote is what unites them.
Right? Like, maybe that's what it takes to fucking get the Spooderman out of the fucking symbiote is the Sinister Six, right? Like, I don't know. This game
it's
has
gonna
such
be cool.
potential.
Yeah, no, I can't express enough. Like, I've always loved Spider-Man, but I've never been, like, a groupie. Like, Spider-Man, like, sign me up. But But like for this, yeah, 100% in. Yeah. I can't wait to see what Insomniac pulls out. They are Wizards. This game looks incredible. Mm. They find ways to pull power out of hardware that you don't know was there.
It's so pretty.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait.
So I will say at the beginning, at the top of this show, I was talking about the Star Wars game that I'm currently playing, Jedi Survivor, and how it was a big deal for me to just be back in that universe and listen to these characters interact and how it pulled at my heartstrings. And I missed these characters.
Yeah.
And I was a Marvel kid growing up. I read tons of Marvel comics and I loved like any time that I've fallen out of comics for weeks or months at a time, I always like can pick up an X-Men comic and I'm back in it. Watching this trailer for Spider-Man with Miles, with Peter Parker, gave me those same heart tugs of I've missed these people.
Yeah.
I can't wait to be back with them again.
Yeah, absolutely the same. Like having this version of Peter back, this version of Miles back. Yeah. Remembering the time that I spent playing the game. Because I've played, and now that I think about it, and I don't usually do this, especially with open world games these days, but I played both the original Spider-Man game and Miles Morales twice.
Yep.
And like these are big games, and but I just loved playing them so much that I just did it again, and yeah, I can't wait to do it more.
Yeah,
I miss these guys, and I'm glad they're back.
Yeah, and that's everything we have for the show this week. Don't forget that you can head over to goodnight.gg to become a patron of our show. You can head over to facebook.com/GNGGcast where you can chat with us, as well as talk to me directly at GNGGcast on Twitter. If you have any questions, comments, things you want to talk about the PlayStation Showcase, please hit us up. Let us know. We'll talk about them. We'll chat with you about it. But until next time, for Hector, this is James.
And for James, this is Hector.
Everyone, good night.
And good game.